We are in the part of Titus now where Paul begins to map out a roadmap for Titus for the job that he has left Titus on Crete, on the island of Crete, to attend to. And that task is to help set things in order where they have not yet had time to be put in the optimum condition, and where congregations are not yet ready to survive the unfriendly culture of the world. The one like Tom met at the McDonald's today, that would have been a commonplace thing with what the church on Crete had to deal with. So where Paul has Titus to start is with the nature of the leadership that the New Testament church requires, that God wants the New Testament church to have. Now, we have we've pointed out, as I think this letter does, that the task of elders is like one of stewards, that is, taking care of something that belongs to someone else, and that it is a spiritual service. It's not an honorary position, and it requires the necessary spiritual equipment to do this task. It's like on one team, if you think about this, it was on one baseball team. You have guys that are qualified for various positions. The other night, I turned on a ball game late in the game, and one team was way ahead of the others. And the team way behind brought a position player in to pitch. It didn't go so well, but he did an inning or half inning with I forgot how many runs. But the idea is that different positions, your catcher is a different body type, different set of skills from your shortstop. The center fielder usually has different kind of capacities than the first baseman has, and that is not only true in the physical realm; it's also true in certain ways with the church. Now, what we have set out doing is to work our way through the description of the kinds of person it takes for this spiritual service. And the first thing that Paul has dealt with Titus is that the spiritual leadership needs to have first been demonstrated in the home of the man. And we pointed out that this is not saying that faithful Christians never have problems at home to deal with. This is saying, however, that in order to be able to withstand or to deal with the criticism of unruly talkers, verse 10, or insubordinate teachers, verse 10 talks about, then the overseer, as God's steward, must be above reproach. That's at the middle of verse 7 now. So most of these so far have dealt with the home life that's required. Now, beginning at the middle of verse 7, Paul turns a little bit in the direction he is going. He deals now more with the temperament of the kind of man who is cut out for this particular spiritual function in the body of Christ. There, all of us have either a natural or a life-developed temperament that is the characteristic of us, and it takes a certain kind of temperament for this type of work. Now, what we have here is a list of several terms, and each of these terms has such a wealth of meaning that it is nearly impossible to gather it up in one English word. You kind of have to look at it from different angles. So I want for us to do this kind of like we started last time, to compare the ways in which these terms have been translated and then to sort of examine why they are important in this particular spiritual function. So let's start at the beginning of verse 7 and read through verse 9. Scott, let me ask you, if you don't care, to start with the "he must" there and just read through verse 9, please.
"He must not be arrogant or quick-tempered or a drunkard or violent or greedy for gain, but hospitable, a lover of good, self-controlled, upright, holy, and disciplined. He must hold firm to the trustworthy word as taught, so that he may be able to give instruction in sound doctrine and also to rebuke those who contradict it."
All right. Thank you, Scott. Now, you'll notice that for the most part, those deal with the temperament, personality issues of these individuals. And we pointed out last week that what Paul says in Titus, does not word for word correspond with what he wrote to Timothy. The same writer wrote to Timothy in 1 Timothy 3. But you can easily see that they are both passages are talking about the same kind of person or describing the same kind of person. One of the benefits of what we have here is that several of these qualities are used in chapter 2 of Titus to describe the goals that Christians of various ages set for themselves for spiritual maturity. So we have a double blessing in trying to investigate what these terms mean. Now, first he says he must not be, and notice that there's some negatives here, he must not be arrogant. Now, tell me the ways in which this gets translated.
This one, I'm looking at this one, it says bossy.
Not what?
Bossy.
Not bossy, all right. All right, what else?
Self-willed.
All right, not self-willed. What else?
Not overbearing.
Overbearing, not overbearing. What else?
Tempered.
What?
Quick-tempered.
Quick-tempered. We're not quite to that one yet. It'll come up in a different one. It's used. That is a possible translation of this one. And one of the reasons I want to do it this way is that these words sort of bleed over into each other's territory. I have with me the New English Bible, and it uses the term overbearing here. Now, usually the older versions will use this term, not self-willed. Now, putting that together, each of these terms, by the way, from what I learned from the lexicon, is a good translation of what this means. Now, put all of them together. And what kind of a characteristic is Paul telling us is not cut out for spiritual leadership in the church? And you can't use any of these terms. You have to describe it without any of these terms. All right.
If you have an overpowering ego, a posture or a stance of about your own self-character, and that look how good I am in control and the duty of my services here, then I think that that can set you up for a strong opposition. But
okay. Okay. This is a term that doesn't run over into what we would call self-righteousness, but the strong overpowering ego, the feeling of empowerment, the temptation or the desire to have one's own way, I think if I use the word stubborn, it would fit this idea. Serving in this role is not an honorary position. And it does not mean, I mean, I'd say it this way, anyone who is preoccupied with control would not be cut out for this task. That's what he's saying, I believe. And why is this a necessary prerequisite for the service of leadership that the New Testament church requires.
Well, if you're like this, you're really only looking after your own interest, not after the interest of all the shepherds. You're not shepherding. You're not worried about the rest of the church. You're just worried about yourself.
Okay. And to take Jan's thought back to Jesus, remember, when he describes the nature of his leadership, he says the Gentiles like to lord it over other people, and they like to tell this one to do this and this one to do this and so forth. But Jesus said, that's not so among you, because the greatest among you is the one who is, all right, the least. He's the servant of all. So you get the idea there. This is a characteristic which, although most of us struggle with, and I say that because I've been around some two-year-olds recently. I know that this is the human condition. Most of us struggle with this. The man who is cut out for this kind of work is someone who's matured to the place, life has worked on him to the place where arrogance and self-will has been lessened. All right, the next one. And here's what Shauna brought up. Or, quick, and notice the not applies to this too. Or quick temper. What does this, how's this one get translated?
Not soon angry.
Not soon angry. All right. What else? Does anybody have it get translated a different way? All right. What does this, the thought of this, I found a paraphrase, although it's not a translation. It said not with a short fuse or a quick trigger is a picturesque way of saying this. What do you think it's telling us? All right, this is going to be someone on the positive side who will be patient. Patient. He is not someone who is touchy. He can't be someone who is easily offended or who will fly off the handle, so to speak, with word. Now, why would this be such an important characteristic for a shepherd?
Scare off a lot of sheep if you're yelling.
All right. First, you scare off a lot of sheep if you're yelling. All right. That's part of it. What else?
Leads a lot of discontent.
Do what?
Leads a lot of discontent.
All right. It'll lead to a whole lot of discontent, because there will be people who will be uncomfortable with this situation. Also, don't forget, if you're a shepherd, you are dealing with sheep. And I've never owned a sheep or been around a sheep or wanted a sheep, but from everything I can learn about them, they are dumb. And they do careless, foolish things. And so it would be necessary to be patient with them in order to care for them, Tom.
There's some value to remember that that doesn't say not tempered. My old father, I remember my dad, I've seen my dad angry, but my dad had a unique ability, even in his anger, to step back and look at the big picture about what was happening and what was going on, and to help, as I grew up, to help me learn how to view the big picture. So I think it's important to remember that word quick is there.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean flying off the handle and going.
The temper.
Say when we work the streets and as a cop, go bonkers over anything and everything.
All right. Anger is an emotion. It is not good or bad. It is an emotion, but it has to be handled in a healthy way. It is true that Ephesians 4 teaches us that we can be angry and not sin. It's also true that Mark 3 teaches us that Jesus was angry on one occasion. It's interesting that it was with the Pharisees and the hypocrites in that case and not with his own people. We tend to be more toward frustration at times dealing with our children, the ones we care about. But the kind of man it takes here is not known to be quick-tempered. That's if he's this kind of man, he'll be known for that. All right, Jan?
My grandfather had sheep. He could be a quick-tempered man. But you didn't drive them like you did the cows. You didn't yell at them. You got behind them. You were quiet. And if one of them jumped off at that bridge, Grandpa would get mad at us because we were supposed to stand down there and just keep them from doing it. But if one did it, you just have to stand back and let them all go. Because they were all going to follow that one.
All right.
So if you've got a shepherd that's real, I know that sounded like I was being funny and cute a while ago, but really, if we didn't do it just right, a whole bunch of sheep, and we had to start it all over again.
And they, if you got out there and just went to hollering and fussing, they all just scattered, didn't they?
They all went after the one that led.
After the hard-headed
one. Them, and you had to calm down, but you had to start all over again.
Okay. You can see that elders often would have to deal with tense situations, and it would not be good to be quick-tempered or soon angry. All right, the next one. This is one of the words that gets translated, and I think it leaves the wrong impression. It gets translated in the ESV here, not a drunkard, which that suggests someone who is, a drunkard is someone who has the habit of being stopped for drunk driving or picked up and thrown in jail for being out of control, drunk, and so forth. This particular word has a different meaning than that, and I think it'll stand out here. How does this one get translated?
Have not given to wine.
All right, not given to wine. What else?
Addicted.
Not wine. All right, not given to wine. Not addicted.
Heavy drinker.
Heavy drinker. There is another term I think no one has mentioned yet.
No brawler.
All right, not a brawler. And this one, if I were translating it, I would still stay. I'm not a Greek scholar, of course, all of you know that, but I would stay with this term. Because I think it's closer to the meaning in this particular case. The idea is, this is not, one writer that I found described it as someone who acts like he's drunk when he's not. The brawler is someone you never know what he's going to say. There's never a serious thought, or there is never a meaningful word. There is never a silliness about this word, in which the person would be known as wild and immature, not wild in the sense of immoral, but out of control, immature, not serious about life, not having any sense of dignity about him. That would be a better way probably to get the flavor of this word than drunkard. If you think of the kind of lack of seriousness about hold, I'm not saying he's got to be deadpan serious at all times, but neither am I saying he has to be like Otis on Mayberry to fit this quote. This is a fella who is not respected as a spiritual leader because his demeanor does not communicate that to people. All right, what's the next word here?
Bill?
Yes.
One quick comment, interesting.
In Officer Survival School 30 years ago, they used that term to teach us about dealing with people, and they used the term not a brawler, and they defined it as a person who thrives on chaos.
A person who thrives on chaos and often contributes to it. Yeah, that would be the idea. All right. The next one, what is it?
Not pugnacious.
All right. I think the ESV uses violent, so here. Not pugnacious. What else?
No striker.
All right, not a striker. What else?
This version says bully.
Not a bully. All right, what else?
Quarrelsome.
Not quarrelsome. All right, what kind of picture starts emerging now from that word? You can see, can't you, how these end up kind of being related to each other. But this is someone who would be known to not merely to lose his temper or to say foolish things, but to actually engage in violence as a means of settling scores. Wayne Jackson, in his little book on Titus, tells of a time when he knew of an elder who challenged one of the members to fight on a parking lot to settle a disagreement about some church matter. And Wayne surmised as to how that fellow might not have been cut out for that work. He might not have been qualified for that. Pugnacious is the tendency to believe that important things can be settled by a good fight, by fighting. It is to get in someone's face, to tell him how it is, to put him in his place, to make his, to deal with people a little bit like a parent who is dealing with a stubborn 2 or 3 year olds who thinks that because they've made the boy stand in the corner, they have captured the boy's heart. And the little boy may, in his heart, he may be standing up just as stubborn as he, why are you laughing, Casey? Have you seen examples of this? Okay.
No, it stops at 2.
Okay. The tendency to push someone around. And again, you see that the idea is leading and not forcing, and therefore the person has to have a temperament that fits with that. All right, next. Not what? Greedy for gain. How else is that translated?
Dishonest.
All right. For dishonest gain. He's not dishonest. What else?
Sordid.
It's translated filthy lucre, not greedy for filthy lucre in some of the old versions, or sordid gain. Okay, what picture emerges there when you read that? You don't want someone who is interested in succeeding or in furthering his lot in life? There's something unchristian about that?
Not if you do it dishonestly.
No, the idea is caught up in this word, greed, dishonest, filthy, or sordid. That is, this is someone who it can't be someone who is so materialistic that he has his heart set on getting what he wants out of it, or getting what is his, even if it is the means or immoral or dishonest or take advantage of someone else or abuse someone else. This kind of the kind of man it takes for this work will be the individual who has a reputation for honesty and honor in his dealings with other people. And of course, that's the goal for every Christian. But you can see that this man is the opposite of that. He's known for that. Brian, I saw your hand first here.
Well, and I know it goes beyond this, even. But
I've been handed business cards before, and someone puts their credentials, and one of them is, I'm an elder at this place, and that's the first thing I think of when I see
them. Where that office is sort of used, at least for reputation purposes, yeah. What else, Tom?
I actually asked a man one time who was... His name was up, had been nominated or whatever you want to say for as an elder. I asked him why he wanted to be an elder. He said it will enhance my position in the community.
Poor motive. Anyone else? Fred?
Bill, this doesn't always have to be some of the grade that we think about, but I had just a recent incident where we had a problem at work, and a guy come in and looked at the situation and said it was going to cost nearly $700. And we thought about it a while, and I called another one. He come in and fixed it for $81.
you weren't rushing to have that fellow be your spiritual leader, the first fellow, are you? Okay. I want to mention one thing. I y'all know our brother Dennis ran a business in our community, a printing business for many years. He and Carolyn's dad ran it before them. And one of the things Dennis told me when he came to North National is he'd had an opportunity to work with several of our elders. Fred was one of them for years. And he talked about the honesty that he saw in each of those men. We've been blessed in that way, really. And you think about this. What else now do you see here? All right, we take a turn for some positives at the beginning of verse 8. Now, I want us to do this exercise for just a second. Some of you mentioned this was one of them, but let's try to put each one of these characteristics. Give me a positive term that would describe in each of these cases the kind of man we're talking about.
Humble.
All right. The first one would be, I don't know if I'm going to be able to find a place to write these, but humble would be one. What else? You mentioned patient a while ago for this one. I think that fits. What else?
I was going to say, Mr. Bill, I noticed that all of these, the practice of self-control,
all right,
it can apply to all five.
All right, that would be very good. This one would be hard to put into words, but I'm going to use the term dignity for it. I ask you for the words, and then I'm supplying them. So this is just an opportunity for me to have my way about this. All right. All right, this one, actually, in 1 Timothy, Paul does use the word gentle. And one of the writers says that this the opposite of this term is sweet reasonableness or gentleness. And then this one, greedy for gain, I would say
trustworthy.
That's a good word. Trustworthy here for this. All right. Now, you begin to see what we're saying, don't you? We're talking about people here who have matured in the faith and who have a heart like Christ and who have a general reputation for being this kind of man. Can a person be a faithful Christian and not be there yet in these areas? Of course, we may be people who struggle with one or the other of these things, but we've got to be moving in these directions. Shauna?
I was just thinking, someone with all of the traits of humble and patient, it'd be approachable, too.
It'd be approachable. Exactly. That's a very good point. You could go with someone like this with your problems, couldn't you? And he could come to you as well. He would be approachable for you, but he would always be somebody that you could be receptive to as well. What else? All right, we'll run out of time again here. It takes time to do this part of it. But look at the statements made in verse 8 now really quickly, and it's unfortunate I didn't leave us more time for this. But hospitable,
given to hospitality, someone who has an affection for and a friendliness toward and a love for strangers. There are congregations where the congregation feels real close and connected with each other, but when anybody new comes in the door, they feel like it takes them forever to find any kind of acceptance or belonging. And it's up to elders in the church to make sure that doesn't happen to us, that we do better at turning our hearts outward and having room for other people in our hearts. All right, a lover of good. Does that get translated in any other way?
Loving, I enjoy doing good things.
Enjoy doing good things. All right, anyone else?
Loving what is good.
Loving what is good. All right, loving what is good. All right, I think it has to do with being someone who has an affection for and a devotion to and a love for good things and good people. There are folks who have an ear for what is bad. There is an approach to eldering which notices what is wrong and jumps all over it like one of my grandma's old guineas would do June bugs. And that sometimes elders have to deal with things that are amiss. Verse 10 will show that. But the elder is an encourager of what is good. He sees good things. He points out good things. His attention is drawn to good people and the good works and qualities like that, and he is capable of encouraging. Richard Rogers, who preached in Lubbock years ago, said that a man like this can find a little flicker of a flame, and instead of going, he can gently fan it so that it can grow. He's a lover of good in that ways. And remember now, these are goals for us to aim for. What is the next one here? All right. This is the one that gets translated different ways. It's translated in the ESV, self-controlled. Jan, you said what?
It's sensible.
Sensible?
We haven't got the self-control.
All right. There, another word gets translated this way. What else now?
Sober-minded.
What else? All right, you can tell I know the bell's coming here. This is a certain common sense, an orderliness, an ability to live well in an orderly way, to keep things in perspective, and you can see how important that would be in this kind of work. Then next, I'll write it down here, upright. That's what this one says. What else?
Just.
Just. Fair. I think that's the common translation. What else?
Fair.
Fair. Anybody else? Okay. This is someone who lives in keeping with the realities of God's universe. He submits himself to the way life is. All right, next is holy. And next is self-disciplined. All right, how does holy get translated? Is it holy in all of the...
Pure.
Devout.
All right, it's devout or pure. What else? And what about that last word?
Self-control.
All right, this is where that some versions have self-control. Anybody else? And it's close to the word temperate that gets used in 1 Timothy, although there is a different word in the original there. All right, you see now that most of these are directed toward I would say, goodness in his own life. I think that's where most of these get translated. Or, to put it a different way, godliness in his own life. Does everybody see why I would use those two terms? Okay. Now, the previous list of these things are temperament issues that keeps him from being unable to communicate with or relate to the flock. These are, for the most part, spiritual qualities that make him good enough for people to be influenced, godly enough for people to be influenced by his example and by his care. Now, notice that a man can have all of these qualities and still not necessarily be cut out for, my time is gone, to be cut out for the task. It's because, see, the family things we've talked about before, or the temperament issues that we just mentioned, things that he struggles with, they could enter into the picture. This is saying to us, I think, that we want to understand why the descriptions are given here. These are things that enable a person to do what God has given them to do. Thank you guys for being with us. Take 2 minutes off of the sermon.